Have you ever played with a player? He just drove you crazy because, like, some nights he's aggressive, then he might not be aggressive for another three games. He was only aggressive like 1 out of 5 or 2 out of 6 games. Y'all ever play with a player like that?
With that talent, that type of talent?
No, yeah.
I got to think about that.
Yeah.
Jack, can you...
At the 1-2 punch position?
No, it, like, well, guy who got, like...
Or like a other.
Yes.
A other?
No, like a guy who got
anybody.
Tremendous
like,
talent.
You knew what to expect, or you knew what you wanted to expect from a guy night in, night out, but you didn't always get that.
I'm not going to call my guys out, Devin George.
No, but Wednesday, December 8th, episode 139 of the Hezzy, brought to you by basketballgods.net. That was Shaq. They were getting it in about Luka and Porzingis and KP not being consistent, showing up. That was halftime of Dallas, Brooklyn in Dallas last night. Third quarter, it was almost as if Luka and KP had watched the halftime show. They pull out by 17. They're cooking. Brooklyn still undermanned. It feels like the Nets are undermanned at all times, right? But they climb back from down 17 on the back of Durant and Harden late. Watching KD, he's gotten so much better at dealing with the double teams. Part of it is the ISO ball that they're willing to play. I think it's just, you know, repetition and how they space the floor. He catches it more in the middle of the floor. I think Kenny Smith brought that up. But he's just so much more patient. When he was obviously young in OKC or even with the Warriors, he kind of rushed the situation. It was almost like he was just irritated. Like, damn, man, let me cook, right? And he'd either rip the pass too soon or try to shoot it quickly, right, and avoid the double team. And now he's reading the coverage, right? Are they doubling me on the catch? Is it on the turn? Is it on the dribble? And you see him kind of playing that cat and mouse game and manipulating the coverage much better in his older age, man. KD is, in his final form. And him and Harden just took over down the stretch as Luka and KP went ice cold. I want to take a moment here to say rest in peace to Luka's jawline. You know? No, I'm serious, man. The shape that he's in has to affect him down the stretch of games. Remember, you know, like it's been a thing, right? Why does Luka wilt late? Well, look at him. Look at him, man. Come on now. We'll probably never see that jawline again. And so Dallas with a disappointing loss at home on national television. And they're one of those fool's gold teams right now. There's so much parity in the middle right now in the NBA where they could convince themselves they're good, right? But that's probably fool's gold. You'll lose a couple here and you're down out of the playoffs. So I don't know what Dallas does. There's a lot. It's going to be a very interesting trade deadline. I got some trade talk here later on because you've got these teams caught in the middle. How do they view themselves? Monday night, I was watching Cade Cunningham versus Josh Giddey. And they actually matched up on each other. Cade was kind of eating his shit up early in that game. Well, he did really throughout the game. Cade Cunningham, if you haven't been paying attention, the last like 10 days or so is looking like the first pick in the draft. The three ball's coming along. He's starting to figure it out. He has this shot, this finish where it's like a hook shot layup, and he really doesn't need an angle to get it off. Like, you can be in position as a defender, and he kind of just hooks it over his head on and uses glass. Kyle Kuzma has the same shot. He likes to go to that, and then again, the three ball is dropping. And the thing about him is Cade, his game, it's translatable to a winning team, right? Because both these teams right now kind of in the tank, and you see how some of these young guys are playing, and you say, well, what does that look like on a winning team? And the thing about Cade's game is it's all within the flow. He had what did he have last night? 28 points, 11 boards, and 6 threes, right? And it wasn't just by volume. He did it within the offense. Now, the problem was they blew a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter to the Thunder. I keep turning on Detroit because I want to see these young guys and Cade in particular, and they just disappoint me, man. They just disappoint me. Not that they should be good, but this Thunder team is a matchup at home in Detroit. They should circle and be like, all right, this one's a win right here, right? I mean, talk about disappointments, though. Is there any bigger Kentucky disappointment than Trey Lyles? Does Kentucky still claim him? I mean, I guess if they're claiming Knox and Willie Cauley, right, they got to still claim Chubby Trey. But yeah, back to the Thunder. Giddey looked all right. Giddey, you know, I like his physicality. I don't think OKC's going to regret taking him at six, but I also don't think he's going to be a star. I think he's going to be a nice, solid player for a long time. But I'm watching SGA, man. Back to, is it translatable to a winning team? And my question is, what does SGA look like as the number two guy on a really good team? Some of you may point to that OKC team in the bubble with CP. Remember, he kind of disappeared in the bubble. But a lot that people had trouble in the bubble. I don't want to hold him to that. But there is a looseness to SGA's game where he's just playing so carefree and smooth. It's almost like he's playing in the Drew League, right? He's just, it doesn't really matter. And he's so skilled and talented. And I just wonder if he could maintain that when there's actual stakes, when there's actual pressure to win. I'll tell you one thing, though. The way he slashes and gets to the line, that's translatable on any type of team. So, look, I'm not doubting that SGA is a star. I've already done that mistakenly. He's definitely a star player. You remember when Kevin Love was in Minnesota on those bad teams? There was a time where Kevin Love was thought of as this, like, franchise cornerstone, a superstar. Remember, we can't trade Klay Thompson. And, there was just, before he went to Cleveland, right? And then when he went to Cleveland and he was on a contending team, then he was just more of a star. He was an all-star caliber player. I think that's the SGA role, right? So some people getting carried away that he's a franchise cornerstone. No, he's a star level player. How about Hornets Sixers the other night go to overtime? The story for me was James Bouknight finally saw the floor. Remember the kid out of UConn? When did they get him? He slid in the draft, right? He slid out of the top 10, ended up in Charlotte. They've got four players still in COVID protocol. So finally, he got out there. And he looks the part, man. He's got a real irky-jerky. I'm concerned with him physically. If you look at his gait and how narrow his feet are together when he does stuff. But he had some nice slashes. Hit a corner three. Had a big dunk put back. Got the call from our guy. The Hornets telecast, right? Watching Embiid out there. They threw out a real interesting stat. His seventh dunk of the season in that game. When was it? Monday night. And granted, he's missed quite a few games this season, but it's just one. That's one of those stats where you got to kind of pay attention to it, and it kind of shows you that he is not elevating as much, right? He's not as willing to go to the basket and blam on people, and it just speaks to his health. I think is what it does. But you know, one advantage that I think that Embiid has over pretty much all centers in the league. How many centers actually want to go to the free throw line? Joker, right? Obviously. But the thing about Jokic is he's such a distributor. He doesn't really hunt the line like that. But Embiid is really kind of the only true center that hunts free throws, right? Like, he is low-key shady with it. You could put him in the Lowry Chris Paul category at times, really, as a big. Now, he can't do some of those things because he doesn't handle the ball like that. But I think that that's an advantage for him. But the irony is, down the stretch of games, he stops doing it. Throughout the game, he's so good at drawing fouls. And then when the game is tight in the end, he shies away from doing that. I don't quite understand that. So they're trying to post him up late. Danny Green's trying to make an entry pass. And Gordon Hayward's lurking. He's telling him, like, look, I'm coming. You as soon as you pass this, we're doubling. I'm doubling on the catch. And Green kind of looks at him and with no deception and tosses it. Boom. Hayward steals it. Out goes Charlotte in transition. Oubre three ball. Tie game. Oubre had a monster game as he's getting all the minutes he can eat here with the COVID protocol stuff. And then final sequence here in regulation. And again, I'm talking about Embiid. Get to the line. He's so good at doing it. I shit you not. The shot that he took to end regulation was a 1 foot fadeaway. Drifting from the high school three-point line. That was the shot. That was the shot they got. So they go into overtime, and Embiid and Harris's size kind of overwhelmed the undermanned Hornets, right? You got P.J. Washington in there playing center, no Plumlee, and they just kind of mashed him on the board, used their veteran savvy and physicality. But I'll tell you what, Kelly Oubre, man, he damn near pulled it out for him. He was raining threes, and you can see that he's just so much more comfortable in the Charlotte offense than he was in Golden State. I don't have no shade or salt towards Kelly. It didn't work out. It was what it was. But Kelly's a player. You don't want to have him thinking about too much out there, right? In the Warriors system, and he was constantly, you know, there. Hey, where's Steph? Relocate. Off-ball screens. This Charlotte, he just gets to spot up in the corners, run, be athletic, ISO at times, and it just fits his style of play so much better. But Charlotte, after a valiant effort, loses in overtime to the Sixers. So Warriors magic Monday night. No Jalen Suggs is out with the fractured thumb. But man, Franz Wagner looks like he should have gone top five right now. I have no problem saying that, man. I was looking for a comp, but I don't think anybody expected him to be this comfortable handling the ball. Now with Suggs out, they're kind of running like offensive sets through him. You know, he can handle, he can kick to the weak side. He has a float game. He plays above the rim. Defensively, he makes rookie mistakes, but overall, like you see the framework for a good defender. The want is there. And frankly, I like Orlando's core. I do. I think that Suggs being out hurts Cole Anthony, because now you see him trying to balance being a distributor more, right? That the pairing of those two in the backcourt is dope, because Suggs, they're both hybrid guards, right? But Suggs can be more of a distributor, and that allows Cole to just cook and be this natural scorer that he is. But Suggs, with his size, can guard the twos, right? So they can kind of switch matchups and stuff like that. And the Warriors, it took them a little while to pull away. They had a sloppy start, and then you saw Wiggins just go nuts. What, he hit 8 3-pointers in that game? And I talked about it in the breakdown. He's finding a rhythm off ball. You watch his little skips. The pre-footwork to the catch has gotten much cleaner, whether it's a little skip hop or a 1-2 step. He's perfected that. And then if you've noticed, there's a lot more arc on his shot this year. It's just simply because he's releasing it earlier. You know, Warrior fans, we've had this topic of discussion for a while. When Eric Paschal was on the squad, it was like, hey man, this dude's jumping too high. And you see it with a lot of young athletic players, especially bouncy guys, right? They want to jump too high and elevate too high on their three ball in particular. One way to quickly alleviate that is hey, if you let it go sooner, there's no way you're going to elevate higher. You don't have the time. And so it's a nuanced thing with Wiggins, but it's made a world of difference. He goes off. They take care of business. Oh, yeah, Steph's out there in the fourth quarter chasing the three-point record. We've had an open discussion about that again on the Discord and Patreon, but Kuminga comes in, right, does his thing. Anyway, I was thinking, because you hear all these Portland rumors swirling. You know what I think would be a great spot for him? Orlando. Now, he's not going to want to go there, and I know it's not going to happen, but hear me out. Hear me out. Hear the sales pitch. You trade Dame for Cole Anthony, Jonathan Isaac, Gary Harris's expiring deal, and their first round pick, which is going to probably be a lottery pick this year, even if they do get Dame. He's chipped up, right? Mind you, Dame is chipped up. Dame's value, I don't know if it's quite what people perceive it to be. So now, if you're Portland, you got a lottery pick, probably too, the way you're headed, right? Cole Anthony, a lesser version of Dame, but you wouldn't have to change. You could put him in that spot, and that's the same system. Not that you want to stay with that. Isaac, okay, the knee's a little precarious. Gary Harris's money coming off. But from Orlando's perspective, and I know the timetables don't necessarily match up, but that's the type of team that you want to build around a Dame Lillard. Suggs, Wagner, Okiki, Mobamba, long athletes that are going to be able to defend and shoot. So I know it's not going to happen, but it just crossed my mind. I guess the other bit of news is, the Pacers have kind of formally announced they're open for business. Like, we're tearing it down. I commend them. Why linger in the bottom of mediocrity? And so now Warrior fans are kind of salivating at the thought of adding Miles Turner here. And my guy on Twitter, he added me to a thread discussing why Miles Turner wouldn't be a great fit for the Warriors. The guy that made the thread started off by trying to sell me that Kevon Looney is a better finisher at the rim by the numbers. Listen, I don't think there's been a player in league history who has been served up at the rim like Kevon Looney. What do they call it? A silver platter? Oh, he served him up on a silver platter. Kevon Looney has a platinum platter. So I don't care what type of numbers you run out. No, sorry. Looney is not better finishing at the rim than Miles Turner. You've got to use some context here. That's absurd. You're telling me if Miles Turner is lingering in the dunker spot and all those spots that Looney's at, he's not going to be able to finish better than Looney? Stop it. Stop it. You haven't watched Miles Turner. Now, granted, my guy who started the thread, I understand it. He's making the argument. The point is to have conversation. So I get it. But listen, man, is Miles Turner a potentially great player? at, what is he, 25, 26? Of course not. Otherwise, he wouldn't be available. But I think it's a safe bet. You look at his skill set, his age, his circumstances. You put him on this Warriors team, he's going to get the Wiggins touch. He's going to get the Wiggins touch, right? And so I would definitely be willing to bet on that. Again, are we getting young Evan Mobley? Like, no, of course not, right? There's flaws there. But, you know, I think that you got to add some context to some of these statistics. And if you put Miles Turner in the Kevon Looney role, he's going to look crazy good. He's going to look crazy good, man. So I think more of the question is, what is the cost? Of course we want to add Miles Turner, right? But at what value? Right? Because if you have to give them all our young players the kitchen sink, then of course not. You don't want to. I think the question is for Warriors fans, it's going to cost one of the two young guys, right? Kuminga or Wiseman? Who you giving up? Who you giving up? And for me, look, he seems like a great kid, but I'm packing Big Jim's bag. They got rid of that nickname. No, I'm sending Wiseman. I'm sending Wiseman. And I'll tell you why. With Kuminga and just this little bit of time that we've seen him on the floor, he's shown us two things that Wiseman hasn't. A feel for the game and an it factor. And there was a play late in that Orlando game where he kind of hung, dribbled. He ripped through the first step and finished on the other side of the rim. It might have been the fastest first step I've ever seen from a player that size. And what is he, 6'8"? You know, and they zoom in on him and he has this smile on his face like, yeah, I know. I know I'm special. I got it. I know. And, you know, Wiseman doesn't have that, man. Now, the potential of an all-star 7-foot center is more tempting, right? Is the ceiling higher? Maybe. But I'm just willing to bet on Kuminga because of the feel and the it factor. And I know that that's super arbitrary, but that's how I feel. What about y'all? Leave it in the comments. Leave it in the comments here on YouTube. You can at me on Twitter. Who are you giving up, Kuminga or Wiseman, in this Miles Turner deal? Maybe you don't want Miles Turner. Maybe you want Sabonis, which I think would cost more and doesn't alleviate the rim protection. Did we talk about that last episode? Yeah. So you know where I stand with that. Before the Warriors get out on this long East Coast road trip, they've got Portland tonight. I'll be covering that as always. But, you know, CJ... I clown CJ because he's that guy, right? I think CJ's accustomed to it. He's that homie, right? He's a goof, man. But he seems like a great guy. And to hear that serious of an injury, prayers out to CJ, collapsed lung. That's a football injury, man. So he's out. Dame's out with the abdominal issue, and they're coming into San Francisco tonight. So hopefully we get a heavy dose of Kuminga and Moses Moody tonight. But the other news from Portland is, Dame apparently wants a 2-year, $107 million extension. By my math, that's season 35 and 36 for him, depending on if that's part of the option year in this contract right now. Either way, you can say whatever you want, Damian Lillard. Your actions tell us who you are. Clearly, you don't want to win that bad because, to me, what this seems like is, okay, you're content being T-Mac, right? They put up big offensive numbers, get in the playoffs, get knocked out, right? Like, I don't know, man. I don't know. You can't knock the hustle. Look, if money's money, like, if you're happy, you're happy. That's fine. But to hear him asking for that extension around these circumstances, it seems weird. It seems kind of cloudy. I'll finish up here with the Lakers and Celtics last night. The Lakers look good, man. The Lakers look good, you know? Russ seems to be over the, got to see what Bron's doing. Got to check what Bron wants, right? He's just going. And AD didn't even act like he got hurt one bit last night. I didn't see it. I didn't catch every second of the game, but I was like, okay, AD's playing like a big man. And you saw that little incident there where Bron was talking shit to the Celtics bench. And Enes Kanter, I know most of you have been following this thing here. Look, he's a righteous dude. I respect what Enes Kanter is doing. But what I don't respect is whenever he's in LeBron's presence, he can't even look him in the eyes. Come on now. Come on now, Ennis. But yeah, man, you know, it's been real fun clowning the Lakers and the shit show that it's been. But to be perfectly honest with you, I want them to make the playoffs because I want to knock them out. You know, like I want them to be irrelevant enough that it matters when they go down. You know what I mean? But let's see. Let's see if they can string some wins together. I'm not going to, you know, I know Laker Nation's probably got their chest out already after this one. And it was a good win. Boston is, I guess, good, right? But I think they punked Boston, right? You saw them just physically punk them with their size and physicality. And that's the roadmap for this Lakers team, right? That's how they're going to win, their size and physicality. And you saw that happen to Boston late. Full docket of games tonight. Nothing really catching my eye. I guess that Sixers-Charlotte rematch. Chicago-Cleveland early. Chicago, DeMar just entered COVID protocol. Clippers-Boston on the back end of back-to-back. And Warriors-Portland. Yeah, so I can't call what to look for. Milwaukee-Miami, perhaps. But again, there's just so many guys in and out of the roster. I think you got to just scoreboard watch and hop to the game that's close late. This is the Hezzy, brought to you by basketballgods.net. I'm out, y'all.